Session number 13518, reel number 4.
Martin, reel 4.
Okay. Here. We're put in to the dip for protection for the horses. I climbed up one of the dunes there, and I looked over the top, and I found that we were right over the top of the targets for a rifle range. And up at the other end, there were about 20 or 30 Jews all having rifle practice, banging away there. And I shouted out to them then, got to the side, and I called out, stop this firing, God knows what. Then I went up to them and I said, who's in charge of this business? Some Jewish settlement police corporal was there. But he said, oh, we're just having a little practice with two rifles. I said, where are the two rifles then? He said, oh, they've taken them away now. I said, well, what are the other rifles you've got? He said, no, they've all the rifles have gone. And I had a look at the targets. I said, look at these targets here now. I said, this is not 2-2. This is 303 holes in all these targets. And on. So I said, who's actually in charge of this? He said, I am. And these weren't terrorist people at all. They were all highly respectable members of the Jewish community of Adira, sort of thing, virtually the town councillors and people like that, and tradesmen. One of them was a very, very nice chap, a Russian Jew, a very, very nice fellow indeed. And he was, I said, well, the thing to do, I said, just go over here, because I had a Jewish friend over there called Alfred Joseph, who was the manager of a group of orange groves where they planted on the banks of the River Mifja, you see. So we go along to Freddie Joseph. So we went over there, and I said to him, Alfred, what's all this business going on here on your land? He said, it's nothing to do with me. He said, it's all these people are just doing this. So one or two of the others, they came over and spoke to him for a little while. And he was furious, and absolutely furious. And he said, he wouldn't do it at all, you see. So what's the matter? He said, they want me to ask you if they'll give you £5 if you'll keep quiet about it. He said, I've told them you're not that sort of man who keeps quiet for £5 or anything else. So anyway, this big Russian fellow out there, he said, certainly not. He said, we don't want any of that sort of nonsense. And that Russian became a great, great friend of mine ever afterwards. He was always very pleased to see me. But the whole business was there. It was just shows the absolute irresponsibility of them. I know the Germans were knocking on the door of the Western Desert, sort of thing, and there was trouble up in the Caucasus, and it looked as though we in the Middle East were going to be caught in a pincer movement right through. And obviously the Jews were very, very worried, so they wanted to take every opportunity they could to learn to handle any rifles that they'd got. But to have set up a rifle range in the place that they did, where people walked along the shore just beyond them, was ridiculous nonsense.
So they were from Tel Aviv?
No, they weren't. They were all from Hadera. From Hadera. Hadera's a nice little Arab town there. Yes, now after that, I left Hadera and I went to Lejeune, which is just in the Musmus Pass. That leads, it's one of the old roads that used to lead from the south to the north of Palestine in days gone by. Yeah. That was nice quiet little job there.
What time have we reached now? 1940 or 41?
It'll be 1942 when I left to go to Hadera and to go to Lejeune. Yes. And I stayed there for about 18 months. And then one day I had a message to say, you are transferred immediately, immediately to Kalkilia. And luckily, I was told that the superintendent who had ordered my transfer to Kalkilia straight away, he said, inform Martin that it is not because anything that he has done wrong. And I went down to Kalkilia, but I had to take over from a chap down there who'd got into a little bit of trouble because he used to drink too much. And the superintendent had called to see him one day, and instead of sort of being able to sort of receive the superintendent and show him around the station, he was a bit pickled. And he said, you get out of here, and he went straight home to his headquarters and gave the instructions for me to be transferred down there immediately. So I went down to Kalkilia, and that was quite an interesting place there. Well, that was the place where I was attacked by the Jews, because the Jews had started, I think Alamein had taken place, and the Germans had been driven back, and the threat to the Middle East had gone, and the Jewish terrorist movement, the Ergun Zvei Leumi and the Stern Gang and those people, they were sort of starting to operate again very, very strongly. And where I was stationed there at Kalkilia, it was very close to a place called Ramat HaKavesh. And I knew that Kalkilia was one of the places that would certainly be attacked by the Jews. And I was so convinced of this that I think for about 6 months I never went to bed until just before dawn. I used to stay up every night checking on the guards to make sure that they were alert, because I knew that if I didn't keep alert and they went to sleep, we would get attacked and we'd get blown up in our beds. And then one day, I think it was about the 4th of September 1944, I was out with my Arab investigating officer in a little village next door to Ramat HaKavesh, and I went out by vehicle, and I sent the vehicle back. I said, you might need this vehicle, so you go back to the station and I'll walk back with the Arab officer when we finish this investigation out here. We'll walk back through the orange groves. It was about 4 miles. When I got back to the station, it was dark. It must have been 7:30 or 8:00 by the time I got back. And I found the police had got a roadblock outside the police station on the main road. I said, what's going on here? They said, there's special instructions have come from police headquarters that something is afoot. And top security must be exercised on all stations. Sort of. So I went inside and I waited and said, what had happened? My station sergeant was a chap called Madigan. So I said, what have you got, Ernie? He said, well, he said, I've doubled the guards both on both towers and also the one on the lookout at the gate at the sandbag sanger down there. He said, I've doubled all these. And these chaps outside, he said, they've been sent down from Tulkarm to do a road check. I said, right, okay. So we kept as we were, but later on I said, well, it's no good everybody staying up all night, so some of you better get to bed. And McLaughlin was a very, very good, reliable chap that I had with me. I said, Mac, you take on prowler duty. And Ernie Madigan, I said, you keep with the Bren gun and have a Bren gun party with you ready. I said, I'm going to sort of go up on the roof now and just keep a careful check on the guards and have a look around, seeing all as well. Well, about a few minutes to midnight, McLaughlin, he came to me and he said, it's happened, they're here, they're in the garden. I said, what do you mean, Mac? He said, I've just seen them. He said, go on. I said, right, go and get all the boys out of bed quickly and get them all out. And I went round into the tower and I looked out and I could see about half a dozen chaps in our grounds. So we had a wire fence around. The wire had obviously been cut and they'd come in. They're walking in. But at that moment I thought, are they the chaps from Tulkarm that are doing the traffic check? Is it possible they're having a walk around seeing that all is well? So I don't want to shoot them if they are our chaps. So I just called out through this little firing slit in there, who are you? What the devil are you doing there, you see? I didn't get any response except one turned round and let fly with a Tommy gun. And a bullet sat up against the wall. He said, so I thought, right, I know who you are. And then I started firing with my... I must have got about 25 rounds off at them. Quick, I was firing as quick as I could. And I saw one fall and another one fall. And then they ran away and got... And then I looked over by the wall and I could see a lump there. I thought it was somebody bending down up to some nonsense, you see. And... I said to myself then, you know, I'd been firing at these others and they'd all cleared off and gone through the gap, although one or two of them had fallen and got up and crept on again. I said to myself then, one persistent bastard still there, I'll make you move. And I lined my sights and bang, and I pulled the trigger, and what a flash. It was a terrific bomb, you know, and I had obviously just detonated it with my bullet. And the thing went up. Well, I thought then, having seen the damage that a lot of these Jewish bombs had done in Jerusalem and Haifa and Jaffa and Vietnam, I thought, oh my God, when the smoke clears away, what am I going to see? I thought I would see the side of my station all blown in. But when the smoke cleared away, the wall was still intact. But 146 windows had all been shattered. All the glass had gone from window all round the station, all shattered out there. And luckily the wall had just cracked the surface, but it was still standing good. But these Jews, they'd gone over the side, and then they'd been throwing thunder flashes over, and they'd thrown some other bombs. I think they were trying to land them on the veranda where my chaps were sleeping normally, because it's so hot nights like that. We used to sleep out on the veranda. But luckily they had missed the verandas, and when they'd thrown these things over, they'd gone over the top and just fallen in the front of the station. But this was a real bang up there. Well, then we saw a lorry coming down the road, and as it went past the station, there were flashes all across the road, boom, 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 almost as though mortar bombs had
someone had fired four or five mortar bombs and they'd all fallen one behind the other. But it wasn't really what the Jews had done. They had placed these bombs, mines they were, sort of things, to disable motor cars. They had placed those all across the road, so anyone went across, they would blow get their car blown up with them. And this poor old lorry that had gone over had got blown off, sort of thing, and he'd gone over on the side of the road and tipped over. So I went out then. After, first of all, I went out and had a look right round the wall to see there were no bombs left anywhere. And then I went out to have a look at this lorry. And it tipped over on its side. And poor old Arab was there, and he said to me, "Shuhada, Shuhada, you know, what is this? What is this?" He said, "We're just Arabs. We just want to get to Jaffa," sort of thing. And he'd come right outside my police station. He'd been blown up with these things. But the Jews had placed those in before they'd come in, and they'd cut the wire. Because as the sun came up in the morning, I could see what they'd done. They'd come up the side, and they'd cut the wire, and in real military fashion, they'd put white tapes down each side of the cut, so that in the night, you know, in the action, when they needed to run for it, they could go straight through the gap. So after I'd started firing at them and banged at them there, they'd gone back through there. But in the morning, I heard from two or three Arabs that they had seen them carrying three bodies away through the orange groves, and they were the same ones that I had walked down through just before to get to my station. They were probably in the grove preparing their attack as I came through it. I don't know quite whether I was lucky then to have escaped being killed on the spot, or whether they would have let me go through rather than sort of alert us to the fact that they were going to attack. But anyway, we got through that one.
And that was the 4th of September 1944.
That was the 4th of September 1944. Well, the war was still on, you see, but this is the sort of thing. And that same night, the Jews attacked, I think, a place called Khan Yunis. And they attacked in Haifa, police station at Haifa, they attacked. And another place I can't quite remember the name of now. But it was under the charge of a chap called Inspector Clark, Nobby Clark. And he got the sack and he was kicked out of the force for it, really, because He had been warned the same as my station had been warned to put on top alert, and he'd seen this thing, but instead of doing anything about it, he just shoved it in his pocket and he went out to a cafe and spent his time having a couple of drinks there. And while he was out, his station was attacked, and it was blown very badly, and the arms were stolen, sort of thing. The Jews had blown the armory out and stolen a lot of arms and ammunition from it. And Nobby was dismissed the force for neglect of duty over it. That was that lot. And the next thing after that, I went home on leave just before the war finished, 1945. I went then.
Did you get a commendation for your defence of the police station?
Oh yes, well I did. I got a special red ink entry, which I'm very proud of. Yes, I did. I got highly and specially commended for a display of courage and initiative. Oh, no, okay, of courage and leadership
and defending my station on the night of the attack. I got that one. I've still got my little old service register with that in it there.
So you said you went on leave just before the war finished?
Yes, that's right. Yes, that was quite good. Yes, just before I got into Glasgow about 2 days, I think, 2 days before, or 1 day before VE Day. I went from Glasgow. I went over to Edinburgh and stayed the night. You know, I found a little hotel there, and with a friend of mine who he said he's a Welshman called Taffy Cole. When we arrived at Glasgow, I said, I'm not going straight home because nobody knows I'm coming. You couldn't sort of tell anyone during the war years what your travel arrangements were. I said, and having landed here in Scotland, I said, I think I'll have a few days holiday up here in Scotland and have a look around before I go down to south to Kent. So he said, well, that's a good idea, I'll come with you. So we went over there, and we were on the Forth Bridge, actually. There's a little pub just on the side of the Forth Bridge, and we're having a drink there, and the dear old chief petty officer in the Navy, he came over and he's, how do you do? He said, how do you do? He said, it's just come through. I said, what? He said, VE, the signal, has just come through. He said, it's to be officially at 2 o'clock, I think, this afternoon. So I said, well, that's very nice. Have a drink on that on me. He said, yes. He said, I will. So we all sat and had a little drink together and said, thank God the war's over, in this part anyway. And then he said, now come over to the dockyard now. Come over to the dockyard. And we go to the chief's mess. So we went in there and walked in. And he said, can you cook? I said, well, I can cook something. What? So he threw a pound of sausages at me. He said, cook those. Cook those, he said, and we'll have a little bit of lunch together. So we celebrated VE Day with a couple of drinks and some fried sausages. Yeah. Then I went home and had a very nice leave. And I went back again. It must have been about August or September, and I got back to Nablus. Then I went and I saw my dear old friend who was the officer in charge of Nablus. He, Alec Campbell. And he said, I've got a job for you. I said, what's that? He said, I want you to take over to Bass Station. I said, oh, God. I said, no, another outstation, another outpost all the time. I said, I was hoping I might have a little bit of headquarters comfort this time. He said, well, he said, I know you spend an awful lot of time out in outposts and outstations now. He said, but I really want you down at Tubas because something is not right down at Tubas. He said, the chap down there, he said, I can't trust. So I want you to go down there. So I thought, well, that's nice to think he trusts me. So I went down and I took over from a fellow. I won't mention his name. But he said that he'd persuaded and was Mr. Campbell to this. He's persuaded an Arab to offer him a bribe, and then when the bribe had been forthcoming, he'd arrested him and charged him with bribery, and the poor old fellow had got sentenced, and the judge had suggested that the bribe money should be paid to the policeman, as this is a very good deterrent to stop other people bribing policemen. Yeah, Tobias was quite an entertaining little post in its way, really, because it was on the slopes of the Jordan Valley, and really was almost wilderness country after you got down a few miles away from Tobias. And once or twice I had awful jobs there with tracking cattle rustlers or cattle thieves. They would steal cattle and wander right down and then cross the Jordan Valley and go over to Transjordan with them. But once you got down there, you'd go for miles and miles without any water. And I can remember on one particular occasion when we'd been riding for hours and the water bottles were empty, and the only way we could get a drink was to go right down to the Jordan River and water the horses and have a drink ourselves. I remember riding down and the horses, they just went crazy when they got near the river and sort of went plunging in sort of thing and drinking. And we lay down on our tummies there and having a drink, drinking out of the river. And then I just looked up and I saw a dead camel float past. I was just wondering then, oh dear, 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 how many germs am I going to pick up today? But it was a case of either die of thirst or get the germs and hope you get over them later. But get back away to Bass. There was a beautiful spot just below Tobias Police Post where the water used to come out of the hillsides all round and bubble up in a glorious pool. And the Arabs used to say that this is almost the place of Pan, the old shepherd's saint or deity or whatever they call him, the shepherd's god, that he would sit by this place because it was such a beautiful spot. And it was similar to another place a little bit higher up the Jordan Valley, which is known as Banias, which is actually named from that very, very fact of being the place of Pan, but being no P in Arabic, it's Ban. So instead of being Panias, it's Banias there. Hold it a minute.